Session number 14217, Thomas Sutton, Reel 1.
Where were you born, please?
At Clapham, in London.
And which year was that?
1921.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a pastry cook.
Did you go to school in Clapham?
Battersea.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
16.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I worked for Unilever.
And so this was in 37?
That's right.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I was a clerical assistant or a clerk.
What was your reaction when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany?
Young enough just to be interested, excited.
Any dismay?
No, only that it was the right thing to do.
What was your own attitude towards the German regime?
One of, what's the word? Against it, sort of, you know, horrified at what one knew.
Were you in any of the early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
I didn't join the Navy until 42, so I was there in London during the bombing and the V1s, V2 rockets.
Where were you living when the bombing took place?
In Wandsworth Common, southwest London.
Can you describe what you saw in the bombing, please?
Well, one special occasion was when they bombed the docks. And a friend and I always used to go up to London and wander around, look at different places, and we actually sat on the embankment and watched the docks burning. That was something which was special, specific.
Which docks were these?
The docks in London, in Thames.
In Bermondsey?
That area, be London docks anyway, the whole dockland was seen to be alight.
Did it? What was burning, the ships or the warehouses?
No, the warehouses, the whole of the area, the town buildings and contents. And I was on the embankment at Westminster, so the docks were kind of 6 miles away, weren't they?
Downriver.
Hmm.
Did any bombs fall near you where you were living?
No, not to my recollection. There were in different parts around, but not near where we were living.
So you didn't get bombed out?
No.
What was public morale like in the bombing?
Very good. Very good. Just went about their normal business. I used to go down and see my girlfriend then with a tin helmet on because I was a fire watcher. And you often heard the shrapnel falling around from the anti-aircraft guns.
Did you think the Germans might win the war in those early stages?
No. No. No question about it.
Why not?
Well, it was just a pride, if you like.
How did you come to be in the Navy yourself?
I volunteered for the Air Force, first of all, and then failed the medical because I had a mastoid in my ear, and when I was in hospital I had call-up papers for the army which I ignored, and then when I came out of convalescence I volunteered for the Navy and was accepted.
What did you think to the initial training that you had in the Navy?
Very basic, very, very, what's the word? Disciplinary, in order to prepare oneself for the rest of one's service. It was normal basic training.
How were you treated by those in charge?
Very strict, very, very old time sailors, but they were very effective.
What branch did you go into in the Navy?
I went into the seaman branch.
What was your first ship?
My first ship was the HMS Howe, the battleship.
Were you in any actions with the Howe?
No, she was a newly commissioned battleship, and so we went through all the what they call evolutions, every exercise that's imaginable, in order to fit the ship for any possibility in action. So you went through exercise after exercise to prove that the ship worked and that the crew worked. They're called evolutions.
What was life aboard? What were living conditions like aboard?
Very cramped, and there was still a lot of old-fashioned ideas. One specific incident I remember was the seeing a petty officer kick a boy sailor. And I couldn't stop myself. I went up and said, "What do you do that for?" And he said, "Well, they did it to me when I was a boy." I said, "Well, what is he doing?" "Well, you know that you must not lean on the guardrail." And this chap was just leaning on the guardrail, looking out to sea, wasting his time. So he just booted him. And that was the answer I got.
Were you admonished for questioning your superiors?
Well, no, he took it quite well. He knew that I had already applied for a CW candidate for a commission. And I think he might have done, but I went down for punishment when I didn't attend a parade, actually, which was under the same Freddy officer. But I didn't turn up. I was half an hour later, I mean, for some particular duty. And I had 5 days, 5 days punishment.
So do you think he was taking it out on you because of questioning him?
Don't know. Difficult. Might have been 3 days rather than five, you don't know. But that was the incident that, as you say, the conditions. Otherwise, I enjoyed it. It was interesting, particularly the exercise. I made a note there that I was spotter to Lord Curzon. Strangely enough, he was the grandson of Earl Howe. The current Earl Howe, and it was just my fortune to be given that job in the gunnery exercises.
And the Howe was doing its evolutions in the United Kingdom?
Yeah, Scapa Flow.
Were there any German air attacks on Scapa whilst you were there?
No.
After you got your commission, what did you then go into?
I volunteered for combined operations, which was for landing craft.
Why did you volunteer for that?
Because I did not like being in a big ship with 1,600 other people. So I wanted something smaller.
Why didn't you like being in the big ships?
Well, there's just too many people. It's like a big, you know, too much regimental work. So I wanted to. And also I thought in a smaller ship I'd be my own master more.
Did it turn out to be right?
Yep. Because I went to King Alfred and had my officer training, and as soon as I passed, I went straight as first lieutenant on a landing craft.
Which landing craft was this?
That was I can't remember.
LCT.
It was a Mark III. It was a Mark III landing craft.
LCT 405. You put here.
Oh, it could be. Yes. Yes, that's right, 405.
Can you tell me what they look like and what equipment they had?
Well, they're about 150 feet long. I think they weigh about 180 tons, I think. They can carry about nine lorries or six tanks and a crew of about 12. 10 or 12, two officers and crew of 12, and a long tank deck, as they call it, for containing the vehicles, with the side combings or side platforms with a combing at the side keep the water out, and a ramp at the front to let the vehicles out. That's all. Brief description.
What was your job?
I was the first lieutenant, which is the assistant or deputy to the commander. That was the first job. So it was navigation, all the things that needed to do to stand in for the captain when he was off duty. So we took it watch and watch about when we were at sea.
So you said you liked being in a small ship, but were there any disadvantages to it?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Where was LCT 405 operating when you were with it?
On the Clyde, off Rothsay Island in Glasgow, you know, off Glasgow. We were up and down the various locks of the Clyde, practicing landing, towing, and some firing practice as well. Mostly taking on vehicles and offloading them. That's all.
And then you transferred to LCT 2233 for D-Day.
That's right, for D-Day. That was in the October, wasn't it?
Can you take me through, step by step in detail, what you remember about the preparations for D-Day and the actual execution of the job, please?
Well, it was long, long period of training. This is the point. I mean, you're practicing all the time, loading vehicles and offloading vehicles, so that you can, as a crew, you can lower the door, the ramp, in order to let the vehicles off as quickly as possible. And you're going through all the exercises of that may fit you, like the evolutions on the battleship, that may fit you for any particular occasion, whether it be towing and navigation, all manner of exercises, no different really to any other ship, but specifically with the idea of carrying tanks. That's all. You can't really describe any more than just maintaining a training efficiency for a particular occasion for which you didn't know when it was going to happen.
Is there any problem about a tank disembarking from an LCT? Are they liable to get stuck?
Yes. You've got to be quite sure that it's in enough water. It's not too deep. That happened actually on D-Day. I thought we'd come to that later, but it was all manner of firing, of course, the guns. You had two Oerlikon guns on the one on either side of the bridge. You had your own pistol, rifle on the bridge, as if anything was required, that might come up at close quarters. So all those things had to be done in training as well to make certain people could fire accurately.
What happened if the tank got stuck? Did you have heavy handling equipment to move them?
No. You'd have to, if it got stuck on going out, you'd have to leave it and move away. You don't you, do you know the exercise of beaching? Because you have an anchor which you drop kind of 200 or 150 yards behind you as you go into the beach. And so therefore, to get yourself off the beach, you then use your winch to pull the landing craft off the beach. So if a tank got stuck in the entrance and so on, you'd almost, in effect, have to get rid of it and push it off, get the men out first of all, push it off and pull the landing craft from underneath it, the door. That's the kind of exercise you'd have to anticipate.
So it's just a write-off?
It would be, yeah.
And you were commanding the ship?
Yes.
Can you take me through your memories of D-Day itself?
Yes. That's been remembered in the last month. 12 of us set off from Southampton, having previously been armour-plated. They were American-built landing craft, I think it's 3/16 steel and made up. And they put 5/8, I think it was 5/8 or 3/4 inch armour plating over the bridge, and over the wheelhouse and over the engine room. You can imagine the front of a landing craft consists of the bridge, wheelhouse, and then underneath the actual tank deck is the engine room. And so they covered that with armour plating. Because of the weight of the armour plating and the thinness of the steel, the rivets dragged, and we had our pumps going all the time while we crossed the channel. And I couldn't tell you exactly, but quite a few of our flotilla were lost because of that particular exercise. They protected the ships, but it was rough. And they sunk on the way over. Anyway, we got there just on H-hour, which is the time of the landing, 6:30. And in fact, we had to stop engines for a few minutes in order not to be too early. And but the point I was mentioning earlier, we actually, I think it may have been because of the water that we had in, extra water, when we actually put the door down, there was 5.5 feet of water, which was too deep for the tanks to go off because they were only waterproofed, I believe, to 4'9" or 5 feet. And so the officer in charge of the tanks said that couldn't go off, so I had to kedge off or pull the craft off the beach, go out again and come in again full ahead together, bounced up the beach a bit farther, and there was only 4 feet of water then, so they rumbled off. And after they'd gone, that's when I got messages from the motor mechanic saying, port engine stops her, starboard engine stops her, generator stops her, permission to leave the engine room. And in effect, we'd gone onto one of these underwater obstacles, and the engine room filling up. She sunk very slowly in about, I think, 12 feet of water. And but it was sinking so slowly, I also had the anchor out, don't forget, that I managed to get all the crew's kit, etc., up onto the wheelhouse and the bridge. So we managed to save all our personal kit as well. Then, from that moment on, nobody really wanted to know us because the landing was going on all around us. You wouldn't be able to imagine it unless you were there, but it was just a very noisy time, and things were going on, as I say, landing craft coming in and various things happening. And no one wanted to know a craft that was just stuck. And so we just stayed there until the tide went out, and the tide came in again, and the tide went out again. And then we decided that we'd had to do something. I'd reported it to the beach officer that I was out of action, but we drilled a few more holes in the bottom of the engine room and cleaned it out, and then put some quick-drying cement in, which was motivated by salt water. Wouldn't it work properly? And by the time the tide came in, she floated. So I got another colleague on another landing craft to tow me out to a buoy, because by that time they'd put some buoys along the beach, and we stuck on the buoy. And every low tide, the tide went out, and we were on the beach, and we just went for a walk. And every, there's nothing to do because nobody wanted you. It was still happening, and they were then, at the time, they were destroying all the other underwater obstacles that had, the tripod ones. You may have seen pictures of them, with 88 millimeter shells on them, and they used to blow a whistle 3 times. And when you heard that whistle, you went flat on your face, and bang, off went the shell, and they slowly cleared the beaches while we were there. And then I think it was on June the 19th, 13 days after D-Day, that big storm came along, and the wire broke from the buoy, and I'd tried previously to get permission to get towed back to England, but I wasn't given permission to do it by the beach officer. And so when this storm came along, I was there, and the wire broke, as I say, and we went round and round along the beach, and we must have stove in about 4 other landing craft as we were going along the beach, and finished up a total wreck. And that was the end of my D-Day. I was brought back to England on a landing LST, a landing ship tank, American one. And we marched into the combined operations base at Southend in full uniform, and it was very amusing at the time because the duty officer refused to, first of all, to accept that we were survivors. He said, "You survivors I get here have kind of just got a blanket. You walk in with your full kit and hammocks." And so I said, "Well, that's a fact of life, and I want survivors leave for these men. They've been through action on the beaches in Normandy, and I want 14 days survivors leave." And I got it in the end. That was the end of that one. We went and when we came back from leave, we then went to pick up another landing craft up in Lincolnshire.
Just let me go back. Which beach was it that you went to?
Gold Beach.
And what did you have on board when you went in?
I think we had three Sherman tanks, just three tanks. They were fitted with special muzzles, high trajectory muzzles, for firing over the heads of the infantry. So they were kind of, as the infantry went forward, so the tanks were fairly close behind them, but firing over the heads.
And how close did enemy fire come to the craft whilst you were there, off the beach?
Not very much that I remember. I remember seeing two or three German soldiers running up the beach ahead when we landed, and I gave orders to open fire, and then they disappeared, and I gave orders to cease fire. And with all the training the gunner had, he couldn't overcome his excitement and so on of firing a gun, and so I had to shout out, run down actually, and gave him a tap round the head to stop him firing. And that was it. That was the end of the firing. So I don't recall many. It's just a long time ago now, but I don't recall any heavy fire or anything. It was so noisy anyway, all round, but I couldn't recall anything very near at hand. Gold Beach was one of the less active areas. That's my experience anyway. Because I can only speak, you see, from the actual beach itself. And if by any chance the fire, the actual line advanced fairly quickly up the beach and off the beach, then in effect any fire would be farther away from me within minutes and hours. Do you understand?
Yes.
Yeah. The front line would move very quickly if you could get off the beach quickly. Whereas like other areas like the Utah Beach and Omaha, I mean, they were fighting on the actual cliffs of that for hours.
How impressive did the flotilla look going into Gold Beach, or the Armada?
Well, I mean, it's very difficult when you're actually dealing with your own particular craft. I mean, you just, all you're intent upon is landing where you should land. Actually, you might be interested in seeing, I kept this photograph of the place where I should actually land, and there's a wreck on the beach here, which I had to land within a few yards of, and it's just, there's a wreck there, and I had to land within a few yards of that. You see, once you go in, that's all you're thinking about, and so I had the various landscape points to look for. This map was taken from, I think from submarines a day before, or 2 days before.
It's got a number, 892871. That's presumably a grid reference.
It's a map reference, yeah.
And it's near a place called Mervin.
Yeah. And the actual village nearby was Le Hamel, because I actually went to Le Hamel 2 days afterwards, after D-Day, and had a haircut. But the thing that impressed me most of all, you said about the Armada going across the channel, all the commanding officers of ships had a program, and so at certain times of the night you knew which ships were going to pass you, and as we were the slowest in the Armada of ships, then all the others would be passing us faster, you see, and finding their positions, and then we slowly came up at the right time. So we actually saw the monitors come through, we saw the destroyers come past, we saw the cruisers come past and so on. And that was the most impressive thing to my mind, was the timetable of the whole event. It was a really organised. organized party.
Then you said afterwards you had another LCT to look after.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that one, please?
Well, that was really the follow-up to the landings where they needed stores, and so therefore we were carrying stores across. What happened was it's almost like a taxi service, really, for landing craft who'd taken part in the landing itself, then went back and were loaded and brought more stores. So in most cases, you went, landing craft like ours, went onto the beach, dried out. When the tide went out, you put your ramp down and your vehicles, if they were vehicles, were run off, or the stores were offloaded into other lorries. And off you, when the tide came up, off you went back to England for another load. So we did that. We did that quite a number of times.
This is LCT 1132.
That's right.
The actual number.
Yep. And then we were taken off to prepare for the Vulcan landing, the opening of the Scout to Antwerp, and that was again another a landing as such. Didn't last very long. It was only it took a few hours to overcome the defences at Vulcan, but it was all part of it.